seed have reached new highs as reduced cotton plantings, along with increased demand from biofuel manufacturers and crushers, compete for the remaining supply. Respected nutritionists agree that feeding cotton seed remains a vital part of your dairy ration. So don't be penny wise and pound foolish. Keep feeding the cotton seed.
Just add cotton seed.
This message from Cotton Incorporated and your local cotton seed dealer. Read more details at cottoninc.com.
Daryl Sims is our guest on our next Coast to Coast program. Hi, I'm George Norrie. He's a researcher of anomalous scientific studies, and Daryl will discuss his quest to unveil the hidden agendas behind alien abductions and alien implants, including new work on DNA abductees who claim their parents were unwitting surrogates for their alien abductors. What a program.
Coast to Coast AM, tonight at 10 on 1460 KION. More stimulating talk radio.
I don't know how I can top that. I might just turn off the microphone and go home. Alien abductors and DNA? Where did they come up with this stuff? All right, good morning. Welcome back to the program. 12 minutes after 8 o'clock, 812 on KION. Wake up Monterey, the KION Community Forum. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Before we get to our next guest, I do want to mention, I just got a note here from Linda McIntyre, who runs the Moss Landing Harbor District, that today the Army Corps of Engineers is conducting a jetty repair project on the South Jetty at the end of Sandholt Road, and it starts today. It's expected to take place daily from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. for 2 to 3 weeks. It'll exclude weekends, and there may be up to 10 large trucks daily hauling rock and material, and this is going to mean that there's going to be a lot of congestion in that area, so if you're heading out to Moss Landing, you've got work out in the harbor, you can expect that there will be some delays there because of that project. All right, 8:12 is our time here on 1460 KION. Let's bring on board Eric Greenberg, and we want to talk about the impact of the youth vote this year. Eric, thank you for joining us on KION.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Really appreciate it. You're the author of the co-author of the upcoming book, Generation We, How Millennial Youth Are Taking Over America and Changing Our World Forever. Now, I guess, are you holding back to see what happens in the November election before you finish the book?
No, it's out.
It is out. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be in Barnes & Noble nationwide within the week, and It's on Amazon.com. And also, it's available for free download on the internet at www.gen-we.com.
Okay.
We put all the book, all the research that went into it, and all the analysis that went around it on the internet is open source.
Oh, cool. So actually, I got this must be kind of an old press release saying that the book was upcoming since it's already out then.
Well, you got the press release probably last week. So. That was factually true last week. This week, we have a book.
Okay, cool. Well, who are the millennial youth, and why are they so important?
Well, they're born between 1978 and 2000, and the reason why they're so important is there's 95 million young people in this age category compared to only 78 million baby boomers. And by 2016, when they reach voting maturity, there will be over 100 million compared to maybe 73 or 74 million baby boomers.
So actually, they're a much larger group by about 25% than the baby boomers who were born between, 1946 and 1964?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So, you know, what we're saying is listen to your world. It's changing by the day. This is the generation that's going to dominate American politics and society for the next 30 to 40 years.
Well, what do they believe in?
Well, you know, first of all, they believe that they have a strong generational sense. By a margin of 99 or 10 to 1, they believe that their generation shares specific beliefs, attitudes, and experiences that set them apart from generations that have come before them. And based on that, they're very sober about their future and ready to do something about it. 46% of them believe that in 20 years, they'll be worse off than they are today. And that's a pretty pessimistic number for youth polling. But most importantly, they have a strong activist sense of generational mission. And some interesting statistics that we got from our survey work is that young Americans must take action now to reverse the rapid decline of our country. If we wait until we're older, it'll be too late. 89% agreed, 48% strongly, or life in the future in America will be much worse unless my generation of Americans takes the lead in pushing for change. 85% agreed with that, 42% strongly. And lastly, they believe that their generation has better opportunities to make a difference and produce structural change than previous generations, with 79% agreeing to that. And what's at the core of that is that they're extremely driven by innovation and technology. And that was the number one factor. And we looked at, you know, the things that influenced them was innovation, technology, entrepreneurship. And they believe the best way to address that was through collective social movement. And that was over government intervention or individual action and entrepreneurship. So you have a generation that's really marked by the greater good and their willingness to work together. And the fact that they see the world as a planet, they don't really go by the dogma of boundaries and borders.
Well, let me ask you about this. Working together coercively or individually and voluntarily?
Well, both. You know, this generation has the highest amount of volunteerism than any other generation. And I think what you'll see is that, you know, they're not really into partisan politics. Only 16% of them identify as strong Democrats, and 10% of them identify as strong Republicans, with about a half really trending independent. Mm-hmm. So what you'll see is they're going to take over the agenda of one of the two parties. And right now they're relating more with the Democratic Party with its messaging because they reject the moral dogmatism of the far right. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you're going to see is a voting bloc that doesn't want to, you know, have a $10 trillion national debt or a $50 trillion Medicare entitlement, a war and health care that's failing, and education systems that are unequal. They're very, very aware of this stuff. And so, you know, they're stepping out and indicating they're willing to do something about this. I think we're going to see unprecedented voter turnout in this election.
Really? And what it says here is that a recent USA Today MTV Gallup poll revealed that 75% of young people that are registered to vote, Senator Barack Obama has a 2-1 lead over John McCain with that group of people. This could be the group that really turns the election for Barack Obama.
Well, you know, I believe that if Senator Obama wins the election, it's going to be because, in large part, of the youth vote. And the closest parallel to this is 1932. Brokaw, you know, identified the GI generation as, he called it, the greatest generation. And they were born between 1901 and 1923. And they were coming to age roughly about the same time as these kids were in 1932. And we saw was the ushering in of four terms of Roosevelt as president. But the contributions to society they made were everything from the New Deal to the defeat of fascism, to the Marshall Plan, to the Manhattan Project, the unprecedented growth of the 1950s and into the early 60s. And lastly, Kennedy, who was a part of that generation, launched the Apollo program, which put a man on the moon within 10 years of setting the goal.
And so you feel that this is the now here's the thing, and I keep hearing this from you know, some of my Republican friends, and they say, oh, well, you know, and even some Democrats, they say, well, you know, they always say every 4 years that the youth is going to come out and vote, and most of the time they never do. I'm not so sure that that's the case this time. I kind of tend to believe that this is a group that is, that a lot of them are going to come out to vote. Maybe not as many as people expect, but much more than in the past. Do you share that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What are the trend signs that you see that say that these young people, as opposed to previous generations of young people, or even young people 4 years ago, are going to actually go out and vote?
Well, you got to remember that, you know, the youngest of them was 22 years old when President Bush took his first term. And I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but I saw some polling numbers yesterday where, you know, you have a lot of people in mainstream media that try to say this. But, you know, really, in the 21 to 25-year-olds or 26-year-olds in the congressional elections of 06, it was something like 80-plus percent of those registered to vote voted. And we got about a 75 to 80% voter registration in the youth right now that's showing up.
Mm-hmm.
So by extension, they may not vote at the exact same numbers of those that are 70 or above, where you see, you know, an 80% vote rate. But, you know, traditionally, the youth voted, you know, at 49%, under 30 in the Kerry election. So, you know, if it goes up to 60, 65%, that's pretty statistically significant.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw 100 to 300% voting increases in the primary season. And right now, if you go on to Barack Obama's friends page on Facebook, you'll find over 2 million people signed up as his friends. And there have been 9 million new registrations of people under 30 in this cycle. Now, that is statistically significant because there's only, you know, roughly 44, 45 million voter eligible people in this generation. So when you're looking at effectively 25% of the voter eligible in the generation registering, what we've seen is roughly 75 to 90% of people that register to vote actually do vote.
All right, 21 after the hour, we're talking with Eric Greenberg. He's the co-author of this brand new book, Generation We, How Millennial Youth Are Taking Over America and Changing Our World Forever. That book is available now in the stores and at Amazon.com. We're going to take a quick time out here on KION. We'll come back and talk with Eric more about what this means for the vote on November 4th. And do they just vote the top of the ticket, or are they going to, you know, be like the oldsters that go in and spend 30 minutes in that voting booth and vote for every single issue from the top to the bottom? We'll find about that as well on KION right after these.
You know, I always appreciate it when someone goes the extra mile. And that's why I love those folks who make Clear Eyes eye drops. They put an extra moisturizing ingredient in every Clear Eyes product in the entire line, even their redness formula. An extra moisturizer they never even told us about. See, they're humble too. So if you want eye drops that do the job, and then some, get Clear Eyes. Use as directed.
All life on Earth started in the ocean.
And today our oceans are threatened.
Pollution, overfishing.
That's why Sam Farr is fighting so hard to protect our oceans and our beautiful coastline.
I keep asking, what's going to be here for my grandchildren?
Sam Farr's won permanent wilderness protection for the offshore rocks and islands along the entire California coast.
That's critical habitat for seabirds, marine mammals, huge variety of life.
And today, Sam's the leading voice in Congress for much stronger protections out beyond our shores.
We need to say to the polluters, to the factory fishing vessels, you can't just do anything you want out there.
For Sam Farr, it's a lifelong commitment.
What's more important than protecting the seas and the sea life that all other life depends on?
When it comes to our oceans and the rest of our environment, Sam Farr is a leader who gets results. That's why this message is paid for by Friends of Farr.
I'm Sam Farr, and I approve this message.
Brought to you by WaMu. WaMu is now part of JPMorgan Chase Bank, the largest and one of the most stable banks in America, with nearly $1 trillion in customer deposits. Bank with confidence at WaMu. Learn more at your local WaMu or visit WaMu.com today.
823 on KION, checking our traffic and weather together. We have an animal on the roadway, 68 just west of Toro Park between Salinas and Monterey. It's a tan calf on the right shoulder. Watch out for that. Non-injury accident southbound Highway 1 just north of Morrissey Boulevard in Santa Cruz County. Vehicles on the right shoulder, but there is some debris in the roadway, so be careful in that area. Another non-injury accident southbound Highway 1 just north of Soquel Drive. And we have a traffic hazard debris in the roadway in Gilroy, 4th at Santa Clara Street. Weather for the Monterey Bay area today, we can expect it to be a beautiful day. 78 the high for Salinas today. You can expect similar highs for Santa Cruz and Watsonville. Upper 60s to low 70s for Monterey, into the 80s for South County, Gilroy, Greenfield. Can I say Gilroy? That's South County for Santa Clara County. Greenfield, Monterey County, King City will be warm as well. Gilroy and Hollister, they'll be up in the 80s as well. And that's our traffic and weather together right here on 1460 KION, more stimulating talk radio. Eric Greenberg is our guest. He is the author of the book Generation We, How Millennial Youth Are Taking Over America and Changing Our World Forever. Eric, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So before we went to the question I wanted to ask you was, are the kids who are going to vote, are they going to go in and just vote the top of the ticket and a couple things they care about and ignore everything else like city council and propositions and local measures and things like that?
I think on a federal level, they'll probably vote the top of the ticket. But, you know, 70% of our respondents said that Democrats and Republicans alike are failing our country, putting partisanship ahead of our country's needs, and offering voters no real solutions to our country's problems. So they'll probably be a little bit more thoughtful, I think, with respect to issues and people on the local level. But what I would compare this to is what happened in 1979 with the Reagan landslide of Carter, or in 92 when sitting president, President Bush the first, only got 35% of the popular vote. Remember in that election, you know, which is odd, was that 19.9% of the popular vote went to Ross Perot, who was the guy who dropped out of the election and went back in.
Right.
So I think this is more about the iconic notion of change and just a frustration with what exists. And it's very hard for them to identify with the party that controlled Congress for the majority of President Bush's terms as being the party that's actually lead them out of this, because, you know, in their adult lives, what they've experienced is just a lot of failed policy. And, you know, and we've added on $5 trillion worth of debt. In fact, you know, the Medicare entitlement was only $20 trillion only when President Bush took office. Now it's over $50 trillion.
Right, right. And of course, that Medicare prescription Part B, the whole story has come out on that, on how they deliberately lowballed what the number was going to be. Karl Rove and the people from the White House lied to members of Congress to get them to support that, and it turned out to be four times the cost, and George Bush and his people knew that. So this is just this has been an administration, quite frankly, that has sown the seeds of its own destruction, Eric. They have not only lied to the American people, they lied to the opposition, which you can expect, you know, that Democrats will lie to Republicans, Republicans will lie to Democrats, but they even lied to their own party members in order to get what they want. You know, how can you expect people to go to the polls then and vote for your candidate again when you have a track record like that?
I think you've hit it. I mean, you know, it's like everything from, you know, the war to, you know, a few weeks ago saying, oh, the fundamentals of the economy are strong, and now we're in the greatest crisis since the Great Depression. You know, I mean, it's almost like a ideological schizophrenia, which is based on payback to those that support me. And, you know, you look at Wall Street, for instance, where the guys that put us into the situation we're in, just in the Wall Street firms, paid themselves out $33 billion in bonuses last year. There's nothing going on to recoup that money or to do anything about it other than to spend hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money on a rescue, by the way, which I support. But, you know, it was interesting. I was at a dinner table with the former head of Clinton's Council of Economic Advisors, who predicts that we're probably going to have another one or two of these things, and we absolutely have to do them. You saw the stock market, you know, we rebound sharply yesterday, and the Asian markets and European markets open up very sharp today. I don't know what they closed at because I haven't had a chance to look, but what you have is all the central banks around the world saying, we're going to print money to get out of this. So what does that mean? That means inflation, more debt, and everything else.
Yeah, we've got this misallocation of investment and resources. They are creating yet another bubble, and the next trough that we fall into is going to be deeper than this one. And the point, you know, here's the real problem. And you talked about this generation being pessimistic, that their life 20 years down the line won't be as good as, say, you know, their life today or what their parents' life was like. You know what? They're not being pessimistic. They're being accurate, because there's no way all of this fiat money and this spending can ever be reconciled except on the backs of the people who are young now and are going to have to pay the bill down the line. They'll pay the bill with inflation. They'll pay the bill with increased taxes and a lower standard of living.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, if government, if healthcare keeps on increasing at its pace, and Medicare entitlements keep increasing, you know, they're projected to take 100% of government receipts by 2060.
Right.
So we're going to get into a very sharp period of punitive taxation and rationing of just health benefits is one example. And so, you know, there needs to be a fundamental rethink of how we run this country. And so these kids are sober about it. But, you know, what's really heartening is they really believe in the greater good, and they are so driven by innovation and entrepreneurship, they think they can innovate themselves out of the mess we're in. And you know what? They're not angry at prior generations, but what they're demanding, and we're seeing this in how they're turning out and how active they're getting, what they're demanding is that something's done about it now. And what you see is a generational sense of urgency. That was, you know, if there's anything, you know, that has been so threatening to the United States' future, it was, you know, it was the Depression and then the fight against fascism.
Right.
I think you have an exact set of circumstances to that, but by gosh, we sure have a similar set, especially when you have people within the existing power structure saying, oh, the war against terrorism could last a lifetime.
Right. You know, and by the way, this thing that you mentioned about wanting to fix these problems now and what we're looking at for the economy-wise, I was looking at LouRockwell.com last night, and there was a story on there by Bill Sardi called The End Draws Near. And this is a sobering estimate from the GAO about what we are looking at financially. And a bleak future for U.S. as Congress continues to undermine efforts to balance federal budget. And this is, you know, not my words, not Bill's, but just the report from the General Accounting Office. And this is what we're saying that we face and these kids face. And it's a pretty scary thing. And I don't know why they're not angry at previous generations, because I'm sure as heck mad at my generation and previous generations for putting us in the mess that we're in, Eric. I'll tell you that much.
You know, it's a different generation. And me being born in 64, which is the last year of the baby boom, I was a little bit more angry when I wrote the book. I wrote the book because I have two kids, 7 and 3, and I thought they were inheriting a damaged birthright. And so that caused us to go in 18 months of study on the millennials, because we knew how large they were and what they thought. And it was really what really came out was that they just want to fix it. And, you know, the kids now have stronger relationships with their parents than, let's say, the baby boomers did. I mean, the baby boomers' parents didn't listen to rock and roll music and everything. Kids today listen to the same music as their parents, and they have closer family relationships. If the baby boom got anything right, it was the fact they brought together a closer relationship with children and parents. And I think this has really had an effect on how these kids view the older generations. But, you know, they really, really have a sense of urgency, you know, regarding doing something about it.
I've got to take a quick news break here. Can I ask you to hang in for a couple more minutes?
Certainly.
Okay. Eric Greenberg's our guest. 8:32 is our time. This is 1460 KION.
Stock shot up more than 350 points immediately after today's opening bell sounded at the New York Stock Exchange. That follows yesterday's record gain for the Dow Jones Industrials of more than 900 points. The rallies are likely in response to the federal government's moves to help stabilize the rocky economy, which includes pumping $250 billion into the troubled U.S. banking system. Republican presidential nominee John McCain will unveil his new economic plan at a campaign event today in Pennsylvania. He'll propose a maximum tax rate of 10% for senior citizens who withdraw money from their IRAs and 401k retirement plans in 2009. In 2010. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has declared a state of emergency in Los Angeles and Ventura counties because of wildfires raging in the areas. Strong, dry Santa Ana winds have moved into the region Sunday night, are hampering firefighter efforts. Nearly 9,000 acres have been burned in the San Fernando Valley. And Apple hopes to quell uncertain rumors when it holds a news conference at 10 a.m. Pacific time today. The California-based computer giant will likely unveil redesigned MacBook and MacBook Pro notebooks. Internet rumors are that Apple will also unveil a Mac priced at under $1,000. I'm Dave Fusari.
I'm Todd Hornick, and I approve this message.
I'm Amy Carrizosa, a peace officer in Monterey County. On behalf of 19 individual officer associations and the entire law enforcement community, we urge you to elect Todd Hornick, Monterey County Judge. Todd's opponent has never practiced law in Monterey County. While Todd has earned our support through his faithful and diligent efforts on behalf of Monterey County residents every day for the past 14 years, Todd Hornick is clearly the best qualified candidate for Monterey County Judge.
I'm Todd Hornick, and I approve this message.
What is it, boy? Is somebody in trouble? Me? Oh, my checking account? Because I shop at pet specialty stores? I should go to Walmart because they have the same premium brands at unbeatable prices? Okay, boy.
Keeping your furry family members happy and healthy, and keeping yourself happy about the price. With Walmart's unbeatable prices on premium pet products like Purina One, Iams, and Pedigree brands, you can do anything. Save money, live better. Walmart. We will match the price of any local competitor's print ad for an identical product. See store for details.
October is Disability Awareness Month. The Monterey County Committee for the Employment of People with Disabilities and the Monterey County Workforce Investment Board will honor 9 local employers and employees throughout Monterey County by hosting an Employers Awards Luncheon on Thursday, October 23rd from noon to 2 p.m. at the Embassy Suites Hotel in Seaside. Businesses and members of the public are welcome to attend. Please RSVP by October 17th. Call Lisa at 758-0973. That's 758-0973.
8:34 is our time. Let's get back to Eric Greenberg for a few more minutes. Then we'll get to Dr. Ted Hollister, who is a retired vet running as a writing candidate for mayor in Pacific Grove. Eric is the co-author of this brand new book, and I'll tell you what, it's going to be a fascinating read. And you definitely want to get a copy of this one, folks. This is, the book is titled, Generation We, How Millennial Youth Are Taking Over America and Changing Our World Forever. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
We're talking about one of the things you mentioned in the book is the way this generation is coming out and the way they're directed in their voting now to what they are believing in. This is a bad times for the Republicans, possibly for the next 30 years. What causes their, quote, antipathy towards the Republicans?
I liken it to 1932, you know, when we had the Great Depression and everything else. Really, what's happened with the Republican Party is it turned from a party of less government and business friendliness to a party of moral dogmatism and borrow and spend. You know, and so they used to make jokes about the Democrats as being taxed and spend. These guys borrow and spend, which is even worse.
Right.
And so it's just, you know, the whole notion of moral dogmatism and that, you know, when you have pastors telling people that they're going to literally not go to heaven because they vote for a candidate that happens to be pro-choice, even though they may not even support abortion as a topic, and you have pastors telling people that they're literally not going to have salvation. That gets into a situation where, you know, the violation of the tenets of church and state, you know, are in place, and it gets to a situation where, you know, it's blindly follow those that think morally exactly the same way we do. And I liken this to McCain's overall message of it's a very dangerous world, and the world could blow up, and I'll keep you safer, but if you're poor and safe, you're better off with me.
that's an apt way of putting it. Here's the thing to me that's just very perplexing, bewildering, and this just shows the power of the neocons inside the Republican Party and how they've essentially taken over this party and they run it. Is, you know, the youth are always the future. Okay, that's undeniable, no matter what. And you've got to attract young people to your party in order to maintain any sort of electoral viability down the line. Now, this year, looking at the primaries, there was one Republican candidate among all the ones running who was bringing young people to his message and by way to the party, could have brought them into the party. And this is the one candidate that was ridiculed by his fellow Republicans, put down by them, barred from attending the convention. They didn't want this guy anywhere near him. And what they're essentially saying is, you know, Ron Paul, we hate you so much, we don't care for the fact that you bring young people in. We don't want them. You don't like our war. We hate you. Go away. Bad message. Bad message.
Oh, it's a horrible message. And you know what Ron Paul was? You know, Ron Paul is a libertarian. And so what this bore out, which we found our research findings, because 56% of these kids said they would support a third party, which I think is structurally impossible given our political system today. What they are is they're not conservative and they're not liberal. In fact, they reject both labels, and you know they are really leaning independent. They just happen to be relating to a shift of an epoch with Obama. And I think it's, you know, Barack Obama said this in his stadium speech in Denver. This is really not about me so much as about you. And I think that, you know, he's an icon just like Ronald Reagan was to a certain set of people at a certain time when America was in distress. And what we have is this generation just coming of age that happens to have inherited just, you know, a horrible situation that's grown much worse in the last 8 years. And so, you know, the whole rejection of Ron Paul, the whole ridicule of Barack Obama, the whole ridicule of the youth vote and will they vote and will they be loyal, these are all people in denial. And typically, when you have a lot to lose, you go into denial. So the neocons did something very interesting. They made a holy trinity with the religious conservatives to really control the Republican Party. So you had the imperialistic aims of the neocons on one side and the moralistic aims of the far right on the other. And they got together and they hijacked the party. And that started actually in 1979, because that's how Reagan brought about his terms in office, was by doing a pact with them.
Right, but you know, you remember the one thing though that the Reagan people did, which was very smart, and they said, "What are you going to do about the religious right?" And that was, "We're going to hold them so close to us they can't raise their arms." They used them to get elected, but they didn't give them what they wanted, And that was actually, in a way, it was a smart electoral strategy. And those people are still there because they essentially, the message that the Republicans got from that was, well, if they don't vote for us, they're not going to vote for anyone. So we'll throw a few bones to them, but we'll never really give them everything that they want. And that was the Reagan philosophy, and it worked for him.
Well, you know, Reagan was more of a secular person. Now we have a member of that far-right faction as president.
Who lets them raise their arms.
Yeah, you know, and he ran his administration off of it. I mean, from, you know, purging of judges and, you know, all the other stuff that, you know, Attorney General Gonzalez was found to have been in violation. What ends up happening is, unfortunately, get what you ask for.
Yeah.
And I can point out where, you know, where...
Eric, can I get I want to get one caller in here, because I've got to get this other candidate on the air in just a couple minutes, but this has been a great conversation with you. But let me bring Tom on the line. Tom, you're on with Eric Greenberg, author of Generation We. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Eric. I think you've engaged in a little bit of revision of history. Number one, Democrats, particularly in the black churches, have constantly commingled in their politics with their church. Give me a break. Number two, I'm not a religious person myself, but I certainly defend the right of any politician to go into any church and tell people what he stands for. And it's the free speech right of a pastor to tell his congregation what they believe. That is up to them, and it's nobody else's business. As far as the youth vote goes, first of all, they've been one of the most unreliable voting blocks ever, every single year. That may change this year. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't predict the future. But the fact is, they've been very unreliable. Rock the vote, vote or you'll die. All these things have been tragic failures. And let me tell you something. I was young once, too, and I voted Democrat, and I wanted the country to be socialist, and then I grew up. Then I find out that I have to pay taxes. I have to pay for all these social programs, which transfer wealth from one group of people to another. And now we're going to have a huge debt. Why do we have the debt? Because consistently the Democrats would stuff all of their programs into every single bill.
Okay, Tom, thank you. I want to give Eric a chance to respond to that. Okay. You have any response?
Sure. The last 8 years have been a Republican administration that's seen the largest increase in government, and I do support the right of people to have free speech. When you start using the pulpit for political aims, though, mm-hmm. I believe that there is a conflict of interest, and I'm not going to hold one religious group out against another and say one is right and one is wrong. We have to get past all this and work mm-hmm. together. And, you know, the very notion that people don't want to pay taxes to pay for the debt, I think, is a disservice to their kids. So if we're going to say, kids, I don't want to pay taxes, and I'm going to leave you with $70 trillion, and because I'm dead, it doesn't matter to me, is quite selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I was a Reagan Republican, and I switched parties because what I saw was a failure of what was going on in the Bush presidency to address the problems of our children and to have an open and honest dialogue with government. I think there's room for both parties, and both parties have to be transparent. And quite frankly, there's plenty of blame to spread around, but we're not going to get anywhere towards solving these problems if we finger point.
Mm-hmm.
What has to happen is we have to have moderation. We have to have Democrats and Republicans alike coming together to solve the problems we have today.
But I'll say this, though. The one thing that Tom did say that was accurate, that in the 60s, in the Civil Rights era, the Democrats did effectively use the churches to push their policies, and the preachers did advocate that people go to the polls and vote for Democrats. I don't see there any, on a base level, I don't see there being any difference between an evangelical preacher in a Protestant church telling the people to go vote for John McCain or George W. Bush and any difference between preachers 30 years earlier who were doing the same thing, telling people to vote for John F. Kennedy or Lyndon Baines Johnson or Hubert Humphrey.
Now, let's go back into a little historical context with this, though. In the 60s, it was about getting civil rights. And so the African-American churches were all about getting civil rights for their people because at that time they still had to sit in the back of the bus. At that time they were still being massacred and lynched in the South.
Well, but weren't they advocating political positions from the pulpit? Were they not doing that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
Around civil rights.
But when you're doing that, if you're advocating a political position from the pulpit, you're advocating a political position. Whether I don't care what you're advocating, you're advocating a political position and people to take action in a particular way. I think that's the thing that he was.
They weren't telling people they were going to go to hell if they voted Republican, though. They were telling people to go out and vote and get your civil rights, but they weren't telling people that they were literally not going to go to heaven if they supported a pro-choice candidate, which is what's happened. There's a big difference here.
I think that in both cases, the commingling of church and state were not the right thing to do. You know, and these churches, you know, here's the thing. If you're going to tell a church that you're going to endanger your tax-free status by advocating political positions, if it's a Protestant, Republican, you know, church, then you got to say the same thing to the other church as well. You know, the First Amendment is what it is, and the Establishment Clause, you know, has been pretty well defined. Would you agree to that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, you know, that a lot of people have overstepped their bounds over the years, and I'm not gonna try to morally justify that, because I'm actually in agreement with you on that point. But what I want to do is point out, you know, some historical context to this, and some possible abuses of power that have existed, which, you know, the caller rightly points out. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all in this together, and if we don't all fix this together, we're going to be in a world of trouble together.
Well, we'll either hang separately or hang together, right?
I guess that's one way of putting it. Yeah. I hope we don't hang together. What I hope we do is come together and actually make something good out of this.
All right. Hey, Eric, I really appreciate you joining us this morning, and I can tell you this. I'm looking forward to getting a copy of your book and reading it, because I think it's got a lot to offer and offer some understanding as to where things are kind of going.
For all the listeners, it's free on the Internet at www.gen-we.com. We put all the research behind the book, all the survey results, focus groups, political analysis, 18 months of research, and we made it available as open source because we didn't want to hide behind opinions. We wanted both sides to have this book so they can draw their own conclusions, because I think it's imperative that both parties, mm-hmm. you know, go into helping, you know, under, go into, you know, franchising this generation and working with it.
All right. Eric Greenberg, I want to thank you very much for joining us here on KION.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And especially taking the extra time. Really appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Okay. 13 before the hour, this is KION.
This is a message for California's Republicans. But I don't mind if Democrats and independents eavesdrop, because Proposition 3 is about sick kids, and they aren't in any political party. The Children's Hospital Bond is a wise investment in the future. 1 million times each year, kids with cancer, leukemia, life-threatening illnesses and injuries need specialized care from Children's Hospitals. Proposition 3 is a model state bond, audit protections, accountability, and fiscal restraint. California's Chamber of Commerce and Republican Governor Pete Wilson endorsed Proposition 3, the Children's Hospital Bond. So does the state PTA. This ad is paid for by Yes on Children's Hospitals. Yes on 3, with major funding provided by Children's Hospital Los Angeles, Rady Children's Hospital San Diego, Miller Children's Hospital Long Beach, Children's Hospital Central California, Children's Hospital of Orange County, Children's Hospital and Research Center at Oakland, Loma Linda University Children's Hospital, Lucille Packard Children's Hospital at Stanford. Please vote Yes on Proposition 3.
In these times of economic uncertainty, there are still safe places to trust your insurance needs. People like you have trusted Mark Dieroff for over 2 decades to help them find safe and reliable insurance. Whether you need health or life insurance, or just want to save money for retirement, you can rely on Mark Dieroff to serve you. Call 1-800-801-0103 for Mark Dieroff. That's 1-800-801-0103.
Rights movement, it continues, and it's in defending the